Are you ready to learn? Because my super experienced guests are ready to share some really valuable information. Make sure and listen all the way to the end to get help and support. So let's start with the best audio experience.
Hello, good people. Welcome to our show. Hello, bad people. Welcome to our show. Anyone who wanna learn more about creating the right content strategy, welcome. It's very important today how you can craft your strategy, how you can stand out from the rest and find channels that have low competition, not overwhelmed and overpriced, and will sell your products in the end. I'm so excited to discuss this topic with Pat Ahern. How are you?
Hey, it's awesome to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, big pleasure. Big pleasure. Wanna learn more? I'm a student in this life, so I can learn from anybody else, especially experts like you, because I know when you have more knowledge, you can provide much better results. But before we start, just tell more about yourself, experience, background, and anything that can help our listeners to learn more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess maybe best way to summarize myself is I'm probably at this point about a 7-time failed entrepreneur, and Intragrowth has gone significantly better so far. But like yourself, always just trying to learn a little bit every day. Quick overview on me, my career path. So I started out in the agency world a little bit over a decade ago. Most recently, prior to Intragrowth, was working at another agency where I met my then business partner. I would say the first probably 6 months we were there, he and I really pushed to make a lot of changes that we just saw as big opportunities for the agency. You know, understandably so. We were, you know, 2 20-something-year-old kids trying to tell this very successful agency owner how to run his business. We got a little bit more pushback on some of those ideas. He was doing just fine without our new suggestions. So after a while, we said, hey, let's take these ideas. Let's start our own business based on these principles. So we started what is now Intragrowth, rebranded from Junto, back in 2016, that would have been. Started out bootstrap, just working nights and weekends. Eventually, we were able to pay ourselves an intern salary and just basically worked in like, I don't know, 40 square feet maybe, and in my buddy Dave's apartment space. And fortunately, have just seen the company grow at a really healthy clip since then. Last time I counted, 40 people on the team from about 19 different states and 9 different countries. And our team focuses entirely on the intersection of SEO and content marketing. Jargony way of saying, we identify what are your customers looking for online when they're getting ready to make a purchase and learn more about your business. We write the best resources on the internet about those subject matters, get high quality websites to link back to you, and then provide SEO consulting services on the side, so that you scale the business exponentially and are front of mind when those people are looking for you.
You know, these guys are from North Korea. They upload. They have no internet, but they're excited. Okay. Yeah. But let's talk about SEO more. You mentioned that you intersect SEO and content marketing, and I think SEO is the huge channel in content marketing because SEO brings more traffic than any other channel. But anyway, we need to cover other channels. It's not because other channels can bring results, but because SEO doesn't work without trust on social media, without many other things. Probably PR, authority. So can you tell how to repurpose content? I mean, like, if we create one strategy for content marketing and SEO, how to intersect them and to save time with creating content to various channels?
Man, great question. So I always like to say that, to me, I see SEO and content marketing as being having such a large overlap, if you're, in my opinion, building a strategy correctly. So the way I like to describe it, SEO has other parts than just content marketing. Content marketing has other benefits than just the SEO side. But the two of them are so codependent on having a really successful business. What I really like to say, a lot of benefits that can come out of each of them, but at the heart of an SEO strategy, really, or maybe a better way of putting it, at the heart of driving results from SEO can really be boiled down to a couple like core concepts. One is, I like to say, make it really easy for people to use your website and search engines to understand your website. And two is just provide really great information on your website that people are looking for related to your industry. Now, in my opinion, content marketing is one of the best ways to provide that useful information, especially if you're taking the focus of saying, hey, you know, 60%, 80% of our content is going to be written with the sole intent of helping people who are trying to educate themselves about our space. And fortunately, when you focus on that type of content, it does really help out for SEO. You get all those eyeballs that then start looking at you as the expert when you pop up at the top of search results related to these terms, and ultimately come back to your site time and time again to learn more and more from you. Content marketing, on the other side of things, you know, you can certainly get people to your website from other channels than content marketing. There's any form of PPC out there. If you already have an audience, you can use email marketing. But at the end of the day, the last time I heard, it was 68% of all online experiences begin with a search engine. That was a 2019 study that, and I'll pull up the link after this. We can maybe add it to the show notes afterwards. But 68% of all online experiences begin with a search engine. So if SEO isn't really at the core of your promotion strategy when it comes to how you're going to get people to your content, you're missing out on 2/3 of the people that could potentially be finding information of value. So probably a really long-winded way of me saying, you know, all sorts of ancillary benefits and elements that come into each channel outside of, you know, one and another. But if you can combine the two of them, it packs such an incredible 1-2 punch together.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. And the main part of SEO is keyword research. Interesting. Bing claims, in 2021, 2 years ago, Bing said that keyword research is obsolete. John Mueller replied to this tweet that we still have room for keyword research. But a few months ago, John Mueller said the same, that keyword research, you don't need keyword research, you need to create content for human being, forget about keyword research, find topics, leave this job for Google. Today we have a bunch of keyword research tools, great tools. Ahrefs, Semrush, Google Keyword Planner, it's free. It's interesting that all SEO specialists use keyword research, that Google tell it's obsolete, you don't need to use keyword research. And what I usually see when people don't understand keyword research. For example, if they open, let's imagine Semrush, type weight loss, you can get plus 100,000, if not million, ideas about weight loss. But and what I usually see when webmasters pay attention to high volume, you know, weight loss, I have no idea what kind of volume, probably a lot, yeah. And but it's hard. It's really hard to overcome websites in the top 10, like Wikipedia, health.com, many other great websites in this niche. And in the second, it doesn't mean that you can sell by having this keyword. I remember when I spoke with a webmaster who lost 400,000 traffic. Yeah, he lost a lot of traffic because Google dropped his ranking positions, but he didn't lose any sales. So he had a lot of traffic. You know, it's hard to get 400,000 traffic, but when you don't lose sales, it means that this traffic didn't relate to sales funnel. Can you tell how to find keywords that it's possible to promote and will bring sales in the end?
Yeah, man, great question. And a lot to unpack there. So, you know, I think maybe the first place to start out with keyword research, when Mueller talks about the idea of keyword research not being as important anymore, I love John Mueller. I think the guy's hilarious, and he's, you know, goes without saying, he's an incredibly intelligent individual. I always like to take what he says with a grain of salt, though. My thought is Google has its own interests in any statement they're going to release. They're a publicly traded company. I think for Mueller, one of his big incentives is to get people out of the mindset of trying to game the system, get people out of the mindset of like SEO is like cheating the system. It's like this black magic tool that you can use. I still see so much merit in keyword research for using as a data validation source. Let's say you come up with a blog topic idea, you know, writing that full length article, you write it in-house. It's probably a 10 to 20 hour process to write, edit, publish the article. It's a huge cost for you to take on without any sort of validation that people actually want to read that sort of topic. Keyword research is great because you can plug in some of the core themes of that article that you're planning on writing and see, hey, the people that currently show up for this type of result, are they getting any traffic to their page? And if so, then you can say, hey, let's try and position this article in a way where we optimize around a couple of these key themes. But getting into the second thing that you mentioned, the idea of, I would say, almost like finding the right balance between going after topics that are going to drive some serious visibility to your site and then the topics that are actually going to bring revenue to your business. What we see work time and time again is really focusing on three core areas of content marketing. I'll add in that there's a fourth one that I recommend more established businesses go after as well that serves a very different goal. So we'll start with the first three for now that we see as the perfect formula here. First thing, you know, you're starting out with a brand new business. You know, let's go with the weight loss option that you brought up. If you're a brand new weight loss business starting out, it's going to be nearly impossible for you to outrank Healthline, WebMD, or any of those other huge platforms from day one. Even if you write the best articles on the internet, they have so much reputation and so much trust that they've earned over the years that you're going to be doing some crazy lifting to outrank them on any of those big themes. So, you know, day one, you're definitely not going to outrank them for diet pills. And day one, you're probably not going to outrank them for any of those other types of keywords that are going to derive direct revenue to your business. What we instead focus on, especially if we're starting out with a brand new business or a business that maybe is like under 1,000 organic sessions a month, is we place a huge emphasis on what we call awareness content. This is going to be the type of content that is very education driven, not high purchase intent. So not the types of phrases that are likely to get you customers, but these are ultimately the topics that are going to be more feasible for you to rank for out of the gate. These are going to be the types of topics that if you look in Ahrefs, they're going to have a keyword difficulty score of maybe 0 to 5 or 0 to 10, depending on your industry. And as a result of those low competition scores, it might be feasible for you to start ranking for those themes 3 to 6 months into you launching your brand new website. We see these themes as a huge way to build your brand awareness, build your site ranking, and gradually build and earn that trust from Google over time. You pair that with some link building efforts, and you can scale things even more exponentially. The caveat I always bring up in there is this type of content is really valuable if you recognize the limitations of it in terms of its goal. So awareness content is phenomenal at serving the goal of building more awareness to your site, getting people to hear about you, and earning more trust in your industry. If you're looking for a content piece that's going to drive direct revenue to you, it's not the thing I would recommend focusing on. What we instead say is, hey, let's focus on this awareness content in order to build visibility and to funnel people to more valuable pages of your site that do have a higher commercial intent. So that gets into the second type of content, which is what we call sales-centric content. With sales-centric content, these are going to be those types of themes that are so beneficial in terms of driving actual purchases on your website. So let's say you're sticking with the weight loss example. If you're selling weight loss pills, the sales-centric content is going to be the type of content that talks about the benefits of weight loss pills. It's going to compare maybe one type of weight loss pill to another and help you decide which is better for you, which has less side effects that are going to come along with that. Now, that being said, getting a phone call over here. The sales-centric content typically is going to be way harder to rank for. So we like to say it's great to put out some of those content pieces, but expect that it's going to take a long time in order to get rankings from that. So instead, write some of that content, funnel some traffic to it through some PPC channels, like let's say Facebook ads, maybe even Google ads, depending on what the cost per click is in your space. And then from there, rely more heavily on awareness content to build that site authority over time and build your ability to rank over time. And in the short term, take that awareness content and then link out to those other resources that are more valuable so that the people who read those pieces and are ready to buy from you can just find it directly on your article when 1,000 people read it every month. So very long-winded, but starting out with those two content pillars, let's call them, that is how we ultimately find the right balance between getting visibility and building your rankings and your revenue over time.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Yeah, love it. Love it, Pat. And I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, for example, let's compare books. You know, 1,000,000 books to any specific niche. But we usually choose famous authors, you know, because we have no time to figure out it's a great book or not. And many book authors can't promote and get names. But for example, if I want to read a book about marketing, I can check Seth Godin, Josh Sugarman, because these authors have strong brand recognition. It's the same with content. You can write even better content than in the top 10. Much better, much valuable. But who knows? You know, if websites in the top 10, they deserve trust, authority. And that's why users choose content from websites they, if they have this trust. For example, why you buy on Amazon? You can buy on other websites. You pay fee to Amazon plus 30%. But you trust Amazon, you know. If something goes wrong, you can ask to refund. You can ask many things. It's simple for you to buy it, you know, with one click because you trust this website. That's why Google ranks Amazon higher, Wikipedia higher because of trust, authority. Let's talk more about that. How to get this trust, authority, how to get strong brand recognition? Because if content is king and we can create high quality content, it's subjective, by the way, but without trust and authority, you can't get ranking positions. So any tips about that you mentioned, want to know more?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny with Amazon, because I, as much as I hate to admit, I'm very guilty of that as well. You know, my wife will make fun of me because I would say 2/3 of my purchases come directly off Amazon.com. And meanwhile, we work with a handful of e-commerce businesses, and I always feel really bad telling them, like, oh, we're not supporting the BTC brand. I bought this one off Bezos. But oh, man. Yeah. So hopefully some of those other DTC brands establish themselves more and they do earn that other trust as well. But in terms of the authority side of things, you know, to your point, it's building up that credibility as the established author is like such a core part of having people go back to your site time and time again. It's such a core reason that if Seth Godin wrote a new book today, millions of people are going to go out and buy it without even reading the overview of what the book's about, because he's shared so many phenomenal insights over time. I would say what's been really fascinating to see within that as well is it used to be that, you know, you would just get indirectly rewarded by writing these expert insights, by sharing unique perspectives, by writing this authoritative content. Starting back in about 2018, I think it was July, maybe August 2018, though, Google actually started to incentivize that much more heavily. They started out rolling out what was called their Medic update at the time, very focused on what they referred to as your money, your life centric websites. What was it? YMYL was the acronym for it. The Medic update initially was very focused on ensuring that sites that were ranking for a lot of these types of topics that had high risk of, let's say, extreme negative consequences, if there was misinformation incorporated in them, particularly medical-centric content and financial advice. So if you were writing a personal finance blog, or you were writing, let's say you were trying to build up the next WebMD, if you didn't have a doctorate or you didn't have a strong background in finance, Google was going to start slapping your site more or less and saying, hey, we're going to take away quite a few of your rankings because we don't have reason to believe that you're a credible source for information on this subject matter. Now, granted, credible source for information is a very vague terminology, a lot of things that can come into that. But Google has really done, in my opinion, Google has really doubled down on that. They've started rolling out what they call, initially they called it EAT, which was a super clean acronym, EAT, for expertise, authority, and trust. And then they added this like awkward additional E into the mix. So now it's this weird acronym of EEAT to add experience into the mix as well. But I bring this all up to say Google has even been pushing in this direction with really trying to reward the sites that can speak with expertise on these different subject matters. And it's expanded far beyond just medical content, personal finance content into, I would argue, every industry. So regardless of what industry your site's in, now we're seeing this big trend where writing content, proving that you are an expert in the space, A, is going to help you to build a better following in terms of your audience, your newsletter, you name it. But it also takes things a step further by helping you to rank better in Google for the other articles that you write about that same space as well. So let's say, tangent aside, getting back to your direct question about, you know, how to really focus on that authoritative content, that's become for us a really big focus for our agency over the past year. It's a big service we've been working on building out in-house, and a big service we've been working on rolling out for our own blog. But what we've seen work extremely well for us to date is placing much more focus on identifying topics that we can post about, whether it's a video, whether it is a blog article, you name it, on a more regular basis that allow the subject matter experts either on our own team or on a client's team to share their perspective on different issues, to share their nuanced opinions about the best way to approach a particular process. The best way I can describe the process of finding these topics is oftentimes starting out with a broad question like, what are common beliefs in your industry that you disagree with? And what unique approach does your team take that your competitors don't take? What mistake do most customers in your industry make that you would recommend not doing if you were, let's say, about to buy this particular product or service? For us, we've seen it work really well, starting out with some of these broad questions, asking them to subject matter experts, and just waiting till we see like the glint in someone's eye where you know that they're thinking, oh man, I could talk about this topic for an hour easily. And then we'll ask them follow-up questions, dive way deeper into this. But ultimately, I like to say building this authority, one of the most direct ways you can do it on your own blog is by finding these types of questions that allow you to convey your perspective, allow you to show your experience in a particular space to your audience. And one of the things that we firmly believe is that most of these topics aren't going to necessarily be aligned with keyword research. So most of these topics aren't the types of things that 1,000 people are going online every single month to ask about. And this can make it very difficult to uncover these topics because many of them are going to be themes that people don't even know that they don't know about yet. With that, the benefit is if you can create these resources and you can promote these resources across your site, across paid channels, you can be the person who educates people on this topic they didn't even know existed, and ultimately earn that trust from them that not only is this someone who I can go to get reliable information about, like, let's call it insert industry 101 centric questions, but this is also someone I should go back to on a regular basis because they can offer so many in-depth insights about this industry that I don't even know that I should be asking yet. And I very firmly believe this is one of the best ways to build that newsletter following and to show people, hey, this is a site that I should go back to time and time again.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. Love it. So valuable. But I want to ask about creating this high quality content. Now, if you take any marketing course, book, anything, you know, you can get that we need to create high quality content. In 2008, when I started my digital journey, I hired a team of writers who wrote about anything. I gave them topics, weight loss, finance, anything. They wrote, Google ranked. They even submitted, drew design, even promoted, no, jack of all trades. Things change. Google fired this team. Okay, I fired this team, but Google pushed me now to fire this team. And today I usually cooperate with specialists who know the topic. For example, if we help clients in finance or investing niche, I search for experts who can write for Forbes, Investopedia. Sorry for my dogs. They usually take part on my podcast. It's hard to disallow them. But anyway, we can see it's live, you know, live conversation. Today I search for authors who have experience in writing. But what I found, many of these experts can share value, great insights, but if it's boring, people bounce fast. It's related to any content. If you search data on YouTube, 80% of users bounce in the first 20 seconds. The average data. In website content, it's the same. Bounce rate is high. People usually read 5% of all books. Yeah, because it's boring. And I remember one great book from Joe Sugarman. He wrote this book many years ago. And this book was more about marketing. But I can relate all these insights to digital. You know, after reading this book, I thought that was written for digital because he mentioned how to retain the audience, how to hook attention, how to retain it till then. Can you tell how to do it right in digital? I mean, like, because, okay, we create high quality, valuable content, but if it's boring, people bounce. They're not interested. They wanna some entertainment attractive as well. So any tips about that?
Oh, of course. It's... So I would say that it brings up a lot of questions that have been really front of mind for us this year in particular. So I'll share tidbits about a few of the things that we're doing to just capitalize on some of those big opportunities that are there. In terms of keeping an audience's attention, that is, I think, one of the toughest parts about blogging. So to your point, you know, my theory and, you know, seeing average session durations, let's say of 30 seconds to a minute for a blog article, you know, fairly industry agnostic in my experience, I feel pretty confident that, yeah, most people who get to our blog, who get to a client's blog are not reading 90% of the content, which is, you know, at times it's frustrating because you're like, ah, damn, I spent so much time putting this together and thinking about every word. And then, you know, like, oh no, people just read the subheaders, read the subheaders, you know, the conclusion, and then they bounced from there. They got what they needed. One of the things that we've been testing out with that I feel very optimistic about is the idea of giving people what I would call quicker answers, getting to the meat of the article in a fraction of the time. The caveat that comes with that is one of the challenges that we've seen in search. I would argue in the past 5 years, maybe the past 7 years, is we've seen a pretty exponential increase in the typical content depth of a first page search result on Google. So back in probably 2013, 2014, we were pretty consistently able to, you know, get blog articles to rank that were maybe only 500 words. You know, SEO was a decade old at that point, maybe 13 years old at that point. Not as many businesses were investing in it. You know, now every business sees the value in SEO and says, hey, we should focus on this. You know, as of, I think it was 2019 or 2020, the average first page result, I think, was 1500 or 1600 words, according to a Backlinko study. Now the challenge that we're seeing is in my anecdotal experience, we're seeing that length get even longer. We're seeing the average first page result for many industries is 2000 words, 3000 words. And my theory is in the next couple of years, the next big shift we're going to see is a gradual shift back to people who give quicker answers and have shorter form articles. Short term, I still think you need, in many cases, a long form in-depth article in order to rank well in search. But you also need to figure out how can you get someone that answer in that, you know, 10 to 15 seconds. Your cat's adorable, by the way.
Oh, man.
Quick sidebar. We're watching my wife's parents' dogs this week, and I'm waiting for them to just start barking. So if I go on mute for a couple of seconds, we know why. But one of the things that we're starting to experiment with that I feel very optimistic about is still keeping that content depth, but taking a lot of that content, instead of, you know, maybe spreading it out throughout the article, instead take some of that, let's call it some of that like FAQ centric content, that like, what is insert theme? You know, why should I be focusing on this particular theme, and dropping it down to an FAQ section at the bottom of the article, and giving the meat of the article, let's say maybe only in like 500 to 1,000 words, having another 1,000 words of FAQs below that, which what we're seeing so far is it helps readers to get to the meat of the article. It helps them to find exactly what they're looking for. It's way easier for the skimmers, but that information is still there for those who want more insights. And that information is still there for search engines like Google to see this content depth and see that we are offering a full perspective on this particular piece. So that's something we're in the early stages of experimenting with. I feel very confident about that. Getting back to the element about, let's call it the separation between, I would almost describe it as like the separation between subject matter expertise and readability, let's say. We talk about that a lot internally, because one of the trends that we've seen time and time again is in so many scenarios, people who maybe are industry experts oftentimes will have a really hard time conveying some of these really complex concepts in terms that, totally agree, his cat is adorable. Many of the people who are trying to convey some of these really complex concepts will struggle to do so in, let's call it like layman's terms that someone can easily understand who isn't as knowledgeable about the space. It's almost like the curse of becoming an expert, that it becomes way harder for you to explain what you see as rudimentary stuff. So what we've had a lot of success doing is, rather than hiring, you know, writers who maybe have a decade of experience working in a particular industry, we instead focus on hiring exceptional writers who are phenomenal researchers, training them on our process about how to learn about a subject matter, and have them go into the article from the layman's perspective and really say, hey, can you explain this concept in a way that a kindergartner can understand? Can you, and specifically, we might look for them to write the article in, let's say, like a 6th to 8th grade reading level, so that the average searcher can read that article, can understand a lot of the big concepts, because they've been, you know, almost like dumbed down into simpler terms that are easier to grasp. And then what we'll do from there is then we loop in the subject matter experts, specifically on the client's team. And we ask them, hey, can you poke holes in this research? Can you offer nuanced opinions about this? And we'll ask them all sorts of questions and treat it as a really collaborative process. So we still get that layman's tone coming into the article that is going to explain these concepts in a very, I would say a very like simplified manner in many cases, but we still get that subject matter expert to come in, critique it, and make sure that it is offering an informative perspective and make sure that it is still factually accurate. So for those that have the ability, let's say whether you're an in-house writer, whether you're working at an agency, it's a really big approach I would recommend taking, is loop in the subject matter experts, assuming you can take their time, and ask them for opinions, ask them for their perspective. One other little trick that I'll share that's worked really well for us so far as well. Sometimes if you're struggling to nail down the subject matter expert to speak to the subject for a while, see if you can, instead of sending them an email, say, hey, can I do a 15-minute Zoom call or a 15-minute GChat call or a Google video call with you? And can I record the call and transcribe it? I'll just ask you a couple of questions, answer them in real time. It'll only take 15 minutes of your day. And we found that to be extremely successful in terms of getting those expert insights.
Yeah, interesting. Valuable. Love it, love it. But I want to ask about common mistakes. You know, I made a lot of mistakes. I keep doing them. Some of them are terrible. If I remember, of so terrible mistakes. I remember when I started on project, because I found the market gap, and we decided to fill this gap to earn a lot of money. But I invested resources for 3 years. Wasted all of them. I hired a big team. Then we quit. the main reason was because I hated Monday. I loved Friday and got it. I can't go ahead like this, you know. And I remember Neil Patel shared something similar experience when he decided to start a website about poker. And he invested a lot of resources, money. But Google didn't rank because he didn't know anything about topic. He didn't play poker. That was not his passion. And he quit as well. And that's why I usually tell it's okay to give up if you don't like it. If you you can make their own choices. That's okay, you know, nobody knows what will actually work. And but if you're not passionate, suffering, it's not my way. I think you need to enjoy. That's why I can work on Saturday evening, night, Sunday, because I love it. You know, I can replace my hobbies with working. Can you list mistakes that we can avoid? I mean, like in marketing, okay, that's okay to experiment, to test, to sometimes get results, sometimes don't. But what kind of mistakes we can avoid from your experience and you see that marketers can do?
Man, great question. And I, before I jump into that, I definitely resonate with that, that if you're not really excited, you know, with what you're doing day to day, it's, you know, that's, in my opinion, that's when it can be good to look at things and say, hey, maybe it's time to, you know, to make a change in things. You know, I mentioned at the top of the show, I think last time I counted, I think it was either 6 or 7 failed businesses that I've tried with, some of which I gave up on, other of which I worked on for a year, lost money on, and then said, oh, this isn't working. And you know, frankly, it sucks. Every time you go through that experience, it's really demoralizing, especially when in my case, like so much of my identity was aligned with like, oh, I'm this entrepreneur. I'm trying to start this, you know, this really cool project that I'm really passionate about. But that being said, those feelings go away very quickly. You know, if like one of the projects that failed, yeah, I spent a year working, you know, all of my free time on it when I was still in college. And when that venture failed, I would say I was really just down in the dumps for probably 2-3 months. But going through those experiences make you a much stronger person. And once you get beyond that, you know, it's all smooth sailing from there. But oftentimes when things are heading in the negative direction, shifting something up, recognizing maybe it's time to step away can be in your best benefit. Getting into marketing mistakes though, I'm trying to think of a good direction to take that one. What I would say is maybe some good broad advice, and we can definitely dive deeper into individual segments from here. What I think is one really important mistake that we see happen very often is not considering what are the pros and cons of different marketing channels when you're trying to figure out like, okay, how am I going to develop mindshare? How am I going to generate revenue for the business? I like to say, you know, SEO, it's SEO content marketing. They are really good long-term investments for your business. But if you're starting out of the gate and you're saying, hey, I want to build a $1 million business, and I need to generate X number of customers in the next 3 months, like SEO is probably not going to be the way to get you there 3 months from now. If you were to say, hey, I want to generate 1 million customers and I have a $2 million marketing budget to use this year, my advice, you know, almost industry agnostic would almost always be, hey, put 80, 90% of that into like paid search, into Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads. Ultimately, you can pay, you know, per customer that you're acquiring, you can get customers very quickly. And in my experience, you're going to pay a bit more of a premium per customer. But then take the rest of that budget, maybe that 10, 20%, invest that in SEO, knowing that that's going to generate a way better long-term return for you. So taking that back to maybe the more broad piece of advice, if you're starting a business today or you're looking to rebuild your marketing strategy today, really biggest thing I could offer is take a look at the different channels you're considering investing in. Force yourself to sit down and write down, like, what is the specific goal or goals that I'm looking to achieve? Ask yourself, what are the pros and cons of each of these marketing channels? and then say, hey, which of these does make the most sense to invest in based on these short and long-term goals that I do have? Yeah, in terms of maybe blanket advice, that would probably be the main thing I would offer there. But Anatoly, let me ask you, in terms of other marketing advice, do you want to look at a specific industry or there's specific themes that I can speak to more in terms of common mistakes that we say?
I think, you know, digital marketing is huge. Content marketing is huge. I don't know. I think specific mistakes in SEO, probably in SEO. Okay, let's take off-page SEO, link building, because you mentioned that you can help customers with that to earn high-quality backlinks. And yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to name this guy, but he's super active on LinkedIn, on Twitter, to share a lot of content about link building. We have no time to earn backlinks for some projects. I reach out to him and ask, please, can you help me with that? He replied, of course, please book a call. And in the meeting, I got sales representative who told me we use only skyscraper technique. We can get backlinks with that. And I ask for examples. When I check out these URLs, man, I don't know when the last time I got such backlinks like 10 years ago. And I replied, it's not white hat, guys. I need white hat SEO. If you mention skyscraper, please show how you can replace backlinks, because skyscraper means you can find backlinks that link to old content, obsolete content. You can provide something new. Yeah, it's common strategy. You can change the strategy, you can improve it. But I check with Archive website, the first version, and I found this agency can use link insertion or hack websites, you know. So terrible. If you have no knowledge, it's hard to check. And it's interesting, this marketing expert, well known, he speaks on conferences, he's super active, he has high engagement, but only experts can find that it's not white hat SEO. And a sales person doesn't know what skyscraper means at all, just know the name of the strategy from Brian Dean. I don't want to tell to anyone it's good or bad. She tried to tell me it works. I'm not sure about that, like 99.99%. I think it's a big mistake when you cooperate or find link building experts without understanding what white hat SEO means. So it's terrible. Even big agencies can do it. But for me, it's better to have no any of page SEO than to have such backlinks. Can you list common other mistakes, you know, in link building? Because it's a big issue with my customers, with myself. So any tips about that?
Yeah, and I'm sorry you had that experience. Link building is...
That's okay. I'm okay with that. So I didn't pay anything because, you know, luckily I have this experience. But, you know, sorry for interruption. I think like it's the same with weight loss. If someone want to lose weight, you know, in the top there, $1 billion companies. And I promote one website for 2 years and a half. We got high results. We cooperated, we ranked content and got like, we increased traffic from 100K to 700K, a lot of traffic. And our competitors were $1 billion companies, big companies. You know, if I take any new project, I usually learn a lot. I learn because I need to understand how it works. And after learning, I got it. Guys, don't pay for pills, shakes. Drink a lot more water. It's free. If you want to lose weight, you need to drink water. You need to eat healthy food, you know. Then results will come without paying for anything like that. And it's, I think any niche has the same issue, like black hat SEO. So, yeah. Just small tips.
Oh, definitely. No, well, so with link building is it's a tricky animal. So my experience has been there are a lot of link building firms out there that I would say don't build the best quality links. There are a lot of firms out there that build what I would say I feel very confident saying are like PBN centric backlinks. For us, I would say we take much more of a relationship driven approach to our link building. But link building tactics have evolved over time. We used to do the skyscraper technique back in like 2016, 2017 when our team was just starting out. Back then, we could send 1,000 emails, we'd get a 1%, maybe a 2% success rate, and we'd get 10 links, 15 links from, each 1,000 email outreach campaign that we did. And
Yeah,
those,
that's great.
we found a way to scale that out. We found a way to systematize that, and it worked great for a time being. And then we saw those conversion rates go down to 0.5% and 0.25%. And eventually, we just had to shift away from it because we said we can't make this a viable solution to the businesses we're partnering with. My viewpoint on link building is I look at it as there are, totally white hat ways to approach link building. But at the end of the day, any form of link building, for the most part, I would argue is manipulating Google's ranking signals. Google specifically says, hey, you shouldn't do anything that's going to manipulate our ranking guidelines. I think that link building, I personally think it's the type of thing that Google sees that people are going to keep on doing it. They always have done it, and they're going to let quite a bit of link building just fly. What I will say about link building, though, is I think that there are cleaner ways to do it. And then I think there are very negative ways to do it, such as, partnering with a team that's going to hack into a bunch of websites and get you a bunch of backlinks from it. I would say that is not a solution I would recommend moving forward with. But what I would also say is if you're starting a brand new business, almost any industry that you're working in, you're going to see that there are huge industry players in your space, unless you're starting in a brand new industry, which is, I would argue, pretty rare to come by. So you're going to start out with all these other emerged industry players that have been building links for a decade or maybe a couple of decades, naturally, and then maybe some manually as well. So in most cases, I would argue that some degree of link building is necessary in order for you to be able to overtake those industry leaders. And while it may not be completely white hat, it may not be completely within Google's guidelines, my personal perspective is it's for emerging businesses, for businesses that want to grow quickly, it's something that is smart to do in a strategic manner. What we specifically pay a lot of attention to with link building is being very cognizant of what I refer to as link velocity, really looking at how quickly are we scaling up your link profile. Way I like to describe it is if we go from having 100 websites linking back to us today to 1,000 websites linking to us tomorrow, in my opinion, there's a very high likelihood a search engine like Google is going to see that and say, that seems like a really weird anomaly in the data. Best case scenario, I'd say that search engine is going to disregard most of those links that are required. Worst case scenario, maybe you get slapped with a manual penalty. So what we pay a lot of attention to is figuring out what do we believe is a conservative way that we can scale up your link profile. What do we see as a gradual way we can ramp that up? So if you're typically gaining 10 links a month, maybe we'd start out building, five links in addition to that. So you go from getting 10 links a month to 15 links a month. And then maybe we scale that up. So then a couple months later, we're building 10 links a month, and then we're building 15 and 20 links a month. If you're a more established brand, you're going to have a higher link velocity coming your way. We might be able to start out tomorrow and say, hey, let's build 30 links a month. You're already gaining 200 referring domains every single month. That's going to be a very conservative number we can go with. So a lot of rambling there, but maybe a more concise way to put it is I would say, unless you're the industry leader, link building, in my opinion, is a what I'd refer to as almost like a necessary evil. I think there are clean ways and there are more precarious ways that you can approach it. I'd always advocate for going the cleanest routes that you possibly can. But I would also say when you are building your link profile, get a sense of, or A, I would say audit the sites that you're getting links from. Make sure they are, you know, legitimate sites that see real traffic. Make sure they're not sites that have seen their organic traffic go from 10,000 sessions a month to zero sessions a month. Very high likelihood that site has been penalized if you do see that. And I would argue that link is not going to drive really any value at all for your business. But what I would also say is if you're starting out with link building, put a lot of thought into how can you gradually ramp up that link profile over time. Don't go from zero to 100. Instead, go from zero to 10, zero to 20, and gradually scale it up from there.
Yeah, valuable, valuable. But I found that, you know, I usually get good results with customers who understand SEO. So if they understand, then we can cooperate like a cohesive team. We know why we need to create high quality content, why it's more important to get traffic value than more traffic, and many other different insights. But if my clients don't understand, usually tell them, take my course, learn from Lily Ray, Jeff Coyle, Mike Phillips, go to YouTube, Google, just learn, get the basic, understand how it works. Then we can understand each other and create the right strategy and implementation. Let's imagine you started today from scratch without any experience, knowledge, skills. Forget about all your experience. It's your first day in SEO, in content marketing. What will you do today if you started from scratch?
Ooh, good question. So what I would probably say, so I started out really learning from Rand Fishkin with his Whiteboard Fridays that he would always do. I'll always be grateful for everything he and the Moz team put together there, because that was such a big backbone of my my SEO journey. If I was starting from scratch, what I would say is Moz has always been a phenomenal resource for information, especially if you start out with the beginner's guide to SEO that they've written. It's a phenomenal way to start out in terms of getting a sense of what are the core levers of search? How does it work? How do search engines operate? What I would say from there, some other things that have been extremely helpful. I think it was in 2015, maybe it was 2016, I took Brian Dean's SEO That Works course. I can't speak to any changes that have happened to it since, what would that be, 8 years ago? That was, I guess that was 3 years, 4 years into my SEO journey. I think 3 years into my SEO journey. And at the time, that totally opened my mind to the way that search engines work. I found it incredibly profound, and I would highly recommend that to anyone. What I would also say, though, is if you are just getting started out with SEO content marketing, one thing I would really advocate for is go work at an SEO agency, go work at a content marketing agency. Agency life is very fast paced. You're going to have very high expectations for you. You're going to, I would say, work very busy days. You know, I'm very excited to say our team, you know, typically only works 40-hour work weeks. I know some agencies that certainly have higher standards that in terms of like how many hours to commit per week. But if you want to learn about the SEO space, I would say go work at an agency for at least a year or two. And before you jump into that agency, start to think about, are there certain types of businesses that I'm really interested in helping? If you're looking to work with mom and pop shops, you know, let's say businesses that are very reliant on foot traffic, you know, they have one, maybe two physical locations. That's a very different type of SEO than working with, let's say, a national brand that is entirely online based. So there are different ways to approach SEO, different types of businesses you can help. Helping a national brand, let's say that's a billion-dollar enterprise, is going to have very different SEO methodologies that they focus on than that brand new, let's say like seed or series A startup that is looking to grow really quickly. So I'd say start out by figuring out what types of businesses are you most interested in helping? What areas are you most interested in getting more exposure to? And try and find an agency that's really focused on that particular either area or that particular customer segment. Go work there as either an intern or go work there as an SEO analyst and just take in as much information as you can. Outside of that, certainly working as like an SEO freelancer is a really phenomenal way to start out. You then have the challenge of how do you get that initial experience, which if you're struggling with that, another really great approach is build your own website about a space that you're interested in. Start writing blog articles, start doing keyword research for your own site. Once you see that first dollar come in, it's very likely going to open your eyes to how incredible this world is, that you can sit at your laptop, you can work from anywhere in the world, you can write blog articles, and if you figure out how to do it strategically, you can turn it into a legitimate business operation. So bit of rambling aside, maybe the more condensed answer is either go work at an agency that's specialized in the type of businesses you want to help out, or launch your own side project, whether it's like a freelance type scenario where you look to work with a couple businesses directly, or launch your own site and learn that way. Make a lot of mistakes on, you know, when your site has zero traffic. Make mistakes like don't update your robot.txt file for the first week after launching your brand new site and wonder why people aren't managing to get to your site from search engines. Way better to do that on your brand new website than on a client site when you're, you know, let's say a year into working at that agency. So that's where I'll wrap it up in terms of my ramblings there.
Nice. Awesome. I couldn't agree more, because it's not like how long you can learn. It's more how often you practice. You know, for me, overlearning can hurt practice experience. You can learn a lot, but if you do nothing, you get nothing. Cristiano Ronaldo, Leo Messi prefer to hit the ball 1,000 times a day than to learn how to play soccer. So yeah, it's more about practice. And Pat, I have my final question about the future. I have my crystal ball, but it doesn't work. I tried a few times. I bought crypto, and my ball told me crypto will go up. It went down. Luckily, I like to listen to Warren Buffett and never put all eggs in one basket, so I can lose some money. It's like to play lottery. You know, mathematics don't play lottery. But, you know, it's not about, of course, it's literally impossible to win, but it's game, you know, it's life. I can spend this money in other place. So, yeah, it's gambling, not a lot of money. And I want to ask about the future. Today, we have AI. It's a regular tool. Apple is going to launch headset, augmented reality. We have virtual reality in games. Mark Zuckerberg tried and changed direction. I think it's not the final attempt. Probably today technologies are not ready to do it. But yeah, I think the future will be interesting and now excited. So can you tell what kind of future will be in your vision and how we can adapt today to this possible future?
Man. That's a good, very challenging question to end on. What do I see most likely in the future? So this is probably the statement that I'll look back on and be horrifically wrong about, but I don't really understand any of the hype around, I would say, the metaverse at large. It sounds like a very cool concept, and I could see it being the type of thing where it's like internet 2.0. And, you know, I sound super, super old and close-minded for not having said like, oh, the metaverse is really cool. It's going to be the future. But I would say that's something I don't at the moment look at and say like, oh, I see a real like practical use case for it. So when I hear people talking about buying virtual real estate, to me, that seems like a waste of money. What I do see as a very, very interesting, I guess, very interesting major update, you know, AI is all the buzz right now. My personal theory, so we're in, you know, August 2023 right now. My theory is that we are in the middle of a very big hype cycle with AI, similar to what we saw with cryptocurrency, similar to what we saw with 3D printing. I would argue similar to what we saw with the dot-com bubble, where, you know, by the late 90s, early 2000s, people were saying, oh, the internet's just this fad. No one's going to start a serious business on it. And I would say I feel the same way about cryptocurrency as well, that I think when I look at the internet, when I look at cryptocurrency, and I suspect the same will happen with AI as well, I think that all three of those did go through a phase where people were dumping a lot of money into them without necessarily seeing a practical use case behind them, or just overinflating the value of those use cases. When I look at the internet, it's, you know, my entire career is built on the internet, and I know so many other people like myself as well, and I don't see the internet going away anytime in the near future. Cryptocurrency, I still think Bitcoin is potentially the future reserve currency for the world, which that could be a whole topic in of itself. When I look at crypto, I think we're going to see a very crypto. When I look at AI, I suspect we're going to see a very similar trend, though. My theory is within the next year, we're going to see a quarter of the interest in AI that we're currently seeing today. And then I think a couple of years from now, it's going to emerge similar to the way the internet did, where it's going to be a dominant part of so many different industries. I think that AI is going to, like, my mind struggles to even grasp how much AI could change the world. If you look at the medical side of things, I mean, it could ultimately make access to, assuming we can figure out the hallucinations within AI, creates the potential to make access to, like, informed medical care accessible to the world at basically zero. It certainly creates a huge potential threat to, you know, the world of content marketing, if we can, and really every other information space, if we can figure out ways to legitimize the information. But really, I would argue, like, democratizing the ideas of, you know, legal services, medical services, any sort of service where there is a highly specialized expert that you need to typically pay a big premium for, similar to what we saw with, you know, the Industrial Revolution, when you went from having, you know, the average pair of shoes being made by this one cobbler to instead getting it mass produced in a factory for a fraction of the price. That's going to lead to, in my opinion, a whole lot of shifts in terms of actual job displacement. But I do think that that is 5-10 years away. I suspect in the next 12 months, we'll see a big, I guess I would say, like, a low point in terms of AI interest and AI investment. So, yeah, long and short of it, I see AI as being just a revolutionary change to the space. I would say renewable energy is a very interesting segment that I would consider myself very uninformed about. I hope that other forms of, call it renewable energy, do start taking over and become more dominant. I hope that we see a greater focus on recycling and trying to take care of the planet, because I do see that as a huge threat as well in the future. But maybe I'll wrap up from there. Can I ask you the same question though, Anatoly? What do you see as the future looking like? What excites you right now, or what's front of mind for you?
My opinion is simple. I think if someone has time to complain about AI, then AI will replace these people. But most experts are excited about AI. They learn how it works. They learn how to adapt, how to change the industry. And for example, yesterday I spoke with Joe Pardavilla. You know, he started in radio host, and today he has podcast. You know, it's interesting. Radio is not like many years ago, but he didn't lose job. He adapted to digital, and today he has a huge audience in podcast. SEO doesn't teach you how to rank websites on Google. Of course it teaches, but SEO can teach how to create high quality content, how to increase website speed, how to earn white hat backlinks that will bring traffic, brand recognition. It doesn't matter what kind of future will be. SEO will be dead. Yeah, I think SEO will be dead because everything has the end. But when you have these skills, knowledge, how to create high quality content, you can adapt to any other channel. It doesn't matter. Marketers on TV, radio didn't lose their job. They adapted to digital. No, so for me, the future is excited. With AI, without AI, you need to switch your attention to channels that will provide results. Will be SEO? Great. Not SEO? Okay. People will pay attention to some specific channels. If we will have the switch, we can switch as well, you know, to go to these channels. You know, today SEO brings a lot of traffic. Yeah, it's the most, I don't remember exactly, like plus 56% of all traffic comes from SEO. Yeah, okay, today it's important, do it. But this knowledge can be used to any other channel, you know, social media, augmented reality, virtual reality. You can learn, you know, human psychology. And I, for example, I love marketing books. Many of them were written before digital. They are great. You know, human psychology, the same. For example, even this book written by Jack London, Martin Eden, about a guy who didn't have any education, but he started to write great books to become great book author because of consistency of working hard. Yeah, it's the same. So if you love what you do, if you are excited, just use technologies, but human psychology the same, you know, people don't change, you know, we still the same human being, but technologies can help to create content for human being. So I, you know, before AI and robots will kill all people in the planet, we still have time. So if it happens, it happens. Probably we will fight like in Matrix or Terminator, I don't know. But if we are alive, that means we can adapt to any channel, and people still need people, human being. So it's my opinion about that. Yeah.
Couldn't have said that better myself. The people who can adapt are going to be the ones who learn the new channels. They're going to be ultimately the ones that thrive regardless of what change comes their way.
Of course, of course. Yeah, Pat, it's a big pleasure to get on the show, to learn from you. I love this experience. That was fun, valuable. I recommend to anyone to follow Pat on social media. Tell the best way how to keep learning from you, how to reach out to you, how to follow you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Anatoly, this was a blast. Thank you for having me on. So I would say best ways to get in touch with me. I try to be available whenever people want to reach out, whether it is to talk about growing their business, whether it's to talk about and kind of nerd out about SEO, whether it's talking about, I love craft beers, especially IPAs. So any good IPA recommendations, I'm always down to chat on that. But best ways to get in touch with me. So you can go to the Intergrowth website, just intergrowth.com, subscribe to our newsletter, check out our blog. If you want to reach out to me, my email is pat, just P-A-T at intergrowth.com, intergrowth.com. Reach out, love to catch up, but yeah, this was a blast. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, big pleasure. Love it. So valuable, guys. You can find links to LinkedIn account, social media, to the website in the description below. Listen us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. Love it. Welcome back anytime to share more valuable insights. Guys, I recommend to anyone to follow Pat on social media because you can see a lot of value. Okay, love you. See you.
Thanks for listening to this entire podcast. Please rank your experience in Apple, Spotify, Google, or any other platforms that you may use. Also, please share your ranking mark on chat at seotools.tv to get a special gift. We'll see you soon on other valuable audio podcasts.